All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Oh, what are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is Tom, and normally I'm here with Lotus, but Lotus has to take the week off. And actually, he's super bummed out because family sicknesses and those kinds of things are keeping him from joining us this week. But we already had scheduled a special guest who's joining me in order to talk about the current state of Skyrim mods. You might recognize Zero Period Productions. He's been on the show before, but he's joining me again. George, welcome back to the show. How's it going?
Always great to be here. Always glad to come back. And hopefully I know what I'm talking about. And there's a lot to talk about with this.
Yeah, you put out a few weeks ago a video about the current state of paid mods in Skyrim, and you are one of the people I know, at least in our circles, who has put the most time into Skyrim at all. And I know a lot of our listeners, and Lotus and I have played a lot of Skyrim, you know, hundreds and hundreds of hours. But you regularly put out Skyrim content. You've tried out so many of these paid mods in order to give them reviews, in order to recommend to people, like, okay, this one's worth the money, this one's not worth the money. And you've kept up with it because it's been, what, like over a year now since they launched the program?
Just over a year. It was December 2023 when they first launched. So we're at it like a year and 3 months now, give or take.
Yeah. So things have kind of changed, but some things haven't changed. And I would highly recommend look up Zero Period Productions on YouTube. Go look up his video for the full rundown. But we're going to break down some of the details and go into some of the other details that you weren't able to cover in the video. So can you give me kind of a rundown of like the state of things when it launched and kind of where we are now with paid mods?
I'll try to give the somewhat abbreviated version while still giving, you know, enough detail that it'll make sense if this is your first time hearing about it. Because Skyrim has gone through kind of a few different phases of programs like this. This is in some ways almost the third iteration of some sort of paid modding system now just for Skyrim alone. The very first iteration was exclusively through Steam back in 2015, and that lasted all of maybe 2 days before it was taken down just right, for the sheer amount of vitriol that it had caused. And that was still before Special Edition had even come out. That was like a year or so before that existed. And it was terribly received. One of the problems was the lack of clear pricing. It was kind of a suggest your own price, but then the authors were also saying, I think it should be this price.
And I remember that. Yeah. Yeah.
There were issues where there were paid versions of previously free mods. There were paid mods that were just really low effort. And before really any time could have gone into looking at it, changing our thoughts about it, or even really getting to try stuff out, it was just gone immediately. And it was always speculated that Steam was one of the reasons for that, because they saw the amount of vitriol and they said, nope, we're not touching that. We're done. We're sorry we ever did this in the first place.
Yeah.
And that was kind of it for a couple of years until after Skyrim Special Edition came out and Bethesda released a new program called Creation Club. Mm-hmm. And that was almost like a hybrid system where Bethesda created some content for that, but they also had mod authors who were creating content for it as well. So they were kind of in this weird place of they weren't really official DLC, but they also technically weren't on the same level as the mods you'd get off the Nexus either.
Right. It was like the B movies of like releases, you know?
Almost, yeah. You had to buy like special Creation Club coins with, you know, real money. And then you were now being brought into this new paid storefront. And the way that it worked was kind of interesting on the back end, because for the mod authors involved in Creation Club, they were paid up front. The way that it worked was that a mod author in the program would go to Bethesda and pitch, hey, I want to create this new dungeon. And Bethesda would pay them once for the pitch, another time for when the Creation Club item went into beta testing, and then a final time when it was cleared for release. And the creator, the mod author, didn't get any commissions. They didn't get any residuals. They were paid up front. And I had been told that they were actually paid very well, that they made more from, you know, any one of those Creation Club launches, those kind of like DLC light releases, than they ever did from, you know, donations on their PayPal or Nexus donation points or anything like that. So for some of the people in that program, they were very happy with what they were getting paid by Bethesda. That but feels... it was still kind of in that weird position of, I almost equate them to, they felt a little like the Oblivion era add-ons, not the DLCs, but like Mehrunes Razor or the 800 houses that we got, the horse armor, exactly. It felt like that, but now also made by some mod authors too.
It's almost akin to hiring an external developer, like
in some ways,
in some ways, but instead of going to a developer house who normally does these kinds of things, like we talked about the potential Oblivion remake and the company that might have been outsourced in order to make that happen. There are these developers who do a lot of this extra work for these main developers, and they get pulled in order to flesh something else out, or in order to add in extra content, or maybe do some design work or whatever. But instead of going to one of those design houses, they were going to modders, who in a lot of ways are just as capable, but they're instead reaching out to individual people in order to do stuff. So that's what that feels like. But so now the system is moved on to this other thing that launched just over a year ago, and it's kind of that was kind of the first stepping stone, and now it's much more fleshed out, right?
Yeah, because Creation Club had ended kind of when Skyrim hit that 10th anniversary, and they did that anniversary bundle where you could buy all the Creation Club items.
Right.
The one-time fee of like $20 if you didn't have, if you already owned Skyrim, which they assumed a lot of people did at that point. And after that, it was kind of radio silence until they launched what is now called Creations. And frankly, this is just where it always gets confusing, because now you have Creations as the menu item in game, which serves as a hub for free mods, Creation Club, the old Creation Club stuff,
right,
and now Creations, which is specifically paid mods.
Yes.
So having that all under the one roof continues to make it more confusing, and frankly, it is always half of these discussions, because you have to try and explain. It's like, well, this is a creation, this is a mod, this is Creation Club, and here's why they're all slightly different.
Right, right. And
the naming is not the best.
Right.
They tried to make it consistent, but that makes it worse in some ways.
That's true. It's true. And the creation engine is another creation. Like, there's all sorts of creation things going on.
They're really getting their money's worth for that one word.
Yeah, right, right. So let's be very clear to anybody who's listening. This has had its detractors, let's call them that, critics, since way back in, you know, 2015, but continuing through, and every time they've added new things, and there are definitely people who are just very against nickel and diming for those kinds of things. I think you and I kind of sit somewhere in the middle. Like, if you are going to put something of quality out there, if you're going to say, hey, here's this really cool thing, and it's worth $5 to me, then I don't have a problem spending $5 on it if I feel like it meets the quality I would want for that price, right? Just like if they launched a DLC for $30, if it's a good DLC, I'll pay the $30 for it. I don't have a problem with that, but it needs to be of a certain quality. And I think that's kind of the current place we are with Creations is, well, is it good quality? And having watched your videos and tried out a few things myself, it seems like it's a mixed bag. Is that a good way to put it?
I very much so. And I'm someone that I've been playing Skyrim mods for over 10 years now, specifically for YouTube. I've been making content on YouTube for stuff in the modding scene for over a decade now, and obviously a lot of the time was specifically free mods, and then it was some Creation Club stuff, and now it's moving on to a mix of free mods and now these new creations. So I'm someone that I've been in the community for a lot longer than I've realized, because I think about how long I've been doing this, and it's always crazy to think about. But even when the first iteration of paid mods released, the one that lasted 2 days, I was already of the mindset of, I am not opposed to paying for something that feels like a DLC, that feels like an expansion. And there were already free mods at that time that rose to that level, that felt as good, if not better, than some of what we were getting from Bethesda at that time, as good as the Dawnguard DLC, as good as the Dragonborn DLC, and so on. And given that it's been another 10 years since then, the modding scene has only grown. It's only become more innovative. They have created entirely new gameplay systems through modding, and it's always insane to see. And that thought process I had of, if it's quality, if it feels new and fresh and exciting, then I am not opposed to there being a price tag involved. I've signed up for mod others Patreons because of that. I've only done Patreons. I haven't done any direct donations, I don't think, but a lot of those mod authors will have that as options. And while those options are there, ultimately, very few people ever actually go ahead and do that, even if they say, yes, I would love to support these mod authors.
Yes.
As an option rather than it being an upfront cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people are more likely to spend money for a subscription to Nexus in order to download mod packs faster than they are to spend money to pay directly to the mod authors, right? Like that's
how very big mods are now, it feels like a necessity to have Nexus Premium. I can't go back at this point. Especially, I really, really can't.
Especially if you're using a Wobbajack to download, you know, like 5,000 mods or something like this. Yeah, absolutely.
But just some of the bigger quest mods, because they'll be 500 megabytes, which doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're throttled to 1 megabyte per second, less than a megabyte per second, I'm just sitting here. It's like, I want to get started on this video and I'm going to be waiting how long for this now? I could just go make coffee.
I need to download it in the middle of the night so I can wake up the next morning and have it. But here's the thing, like, even with the free mods and even with the improved stability of so many of them, the way that the mod, like the Vortex or mod organizer programs, that makes it easier now than it has been in order to organize things and make them all run together. But there's still problems getting them to run sometimes. Sometimes the game will just crash. Sometimes you have like save files that don't work because you added one other mod in and all of a sudden things don't work anymore. There's a lot of complexity with that. And from my perspective, If you're going to give me a really nice new like storyline with some new dungeons, maybe some new items and things like that, and you're going to charge me $5 or $10, but I know by just clicking on that and spending that $5 or $10 that it's just going to launch and it's going to work the first time and I don't have to worry about any of that other stuff, then that makes it even more valuable to me. I can see the value in that, especially from a like, hey, it just works. But there is the caveat of, is it good? Does it actually give you $10 or $5 worth of the content you were expecting? Or are we going back to horse armor and everyone's like, oh my God, this is overpriced. Are they just going to nickel and dime us for everything? And in your video, you pointed out that
There's both. There's the good and then there's the terrible.
Yeah,
there's some in between, but there's absolutely both extremes in that case of, this is what's great and this I wish this didn't exist.
Right. And it seems like that needs to be buttoned up. But like one example is the cathedral mods that you can get for free have tons of updates to like the way the world looks and the textures and the weather and all of these other things, right? And one of the mod packs you can buy in Creations is one single plant. It updates one plant in the entire world, and it costs what, like a buck or two?
Yeah, so that's actually updated a bit since I first talked about it in my video, because when my video came out last month, I talked about, Dr. Jacobo, the mod author who's made the Cathedral series on Nexus, which is, like you said, there's cathedral weathers, there's cathedral water, and he had individual mods for almost every single floor, like every plant, every piece of greenery that existed in the game had a cathedral version where it wasn't just a retexture, it was a complete remodel, complete retexture. He was going out and doing photography of plants in all these different locations in order to create completely new assets. And what happened was he joined the Creations program and started releasing kind of one by one new versions, admittedly.
Yeah.
Like, he was making new models and new textures for them, but he was starting to do, like you said, oh, here's a $1 maple vine
right,
Skyrim.
Right.
Which, if you ask me what the maple vine looks like in Skyrim, right. I wouldn't know off or the top which, of my head.
Or which part of the map it's even in. If I want to, if I load it up, do I even know where to go to find that vine?
I'm walking through Skyrim, I'm like, that's a tree. I'm not sitting there analyzing what tree it is. And if I'm going in and buying a creation, I'm not going to sit here and go, which tree am I replacing today?
Right.
But
and on top of
been
it,
like that.
It right.
started with the $1 maple sap. After that, he released a couple more that were $2 each. And I think at this point, there's maybe five or six different ones. And one of the problems to me has been the inconsistency, because it started using the cathedral name, which did piss people off, because the whole idea in modding was that the cathedral concept was supposed to be people coming together to create always free mods that kind of built on each other, that everyone was coming together to build the cathedral,
right?
Rather than
right.
everyone being in their own parlor where they kept everything to themselves.
Right. So it was a group thing and a lot of people volunteering to work together.
Yeah.
Instead of a single person putting things out in order to just make some money off of that single thing. So there's nothing wrong with doing that, but I can see why people get upset about the branding, the name
confusing.
Of it. Yeah.
So
yeah.
it went from being cathedral with the first one to then Dr. Jacopo's like 3D sapling, whatever.
Okay, that's better. That's better.
Yeah, but then the pricing did change. It was like, oh, first one was $1. The next couple were $2, went back to $1. And I feel like that's one of the issues that I keep on seeing, is that ultimately a lot of the people in the program maybe aren't super business savvy.
Yeah,
and I can't necessarily expect everyone to be a genius at marketing or anything, but
it
the
seems
second
like,
that they joined this, they did become small businesses, and I feel like there needs to be a certain level of consistency or kind of thought in regards to how some things are being treated, and especially with them being sold.
Absolutely. And my thought is, doesn't that then lie on the shoulders of Bethesda to have some sort of validation process? Like, here's my mod. I want to do this one plant model. And then somebody at Bethesda reviews it. And they say, I want to charge $1 for this. And they review it and they go, okay, the plant model is great. It works well. It loads up. It, like, everything checks the box. It gets the Bethesda seal of approval, kind of like the Nintendo seal of approval, right? But we think that the right amount to charge is between this much and this much. And we also would recommend, if you really do want to make sales on this, because very few people are going to buy just a single plant model, wait until you have a dozen plant models that are all, maybe all the different farm plants, and then sell it as a pack and put that pack out for $1 or whatever.
So it's funny you say that, because most recently, Dr. Jacopo did release... Where can I find it? Hold on. I'm just pulling up the website real fast.
Did he do a
just released
pack?
Dr. Jacopo's 3D Plants Volume 1.
Okay.
For 600 credits, which for all intents and purposes is approximately $6 USD.
Right.
Which
but how
is
many
a collection
is that?
Of some of the previous one-off paid mods he had released.
Right. So how many plants are in that pack?
This says 26. This says ferns and fiddleheads, yellow shrubs, reach shrubs, maple saplings, lavender, and deathbell. Please refer to the respective pages for further details, images, and videos. But
okay, all right.
The
all right.
issue
so...
here then becomes that what if you bought one of the standalone versions of these? Maybe you bought the maple saplings when it first came out, you saw this pack and you're like, okay, now I can get all of them for that one convenient price, but you're not saving any money then. You're not getting
you're
a
double
reduced
paying.
Price.
Right.
Yeah.
You're double paying. And even at that price, $6 for 24, that means every plant costs 25 cents.
Yeah.
So is that still a good deal? My gut says most people are going to go, no, because I could spend $6 on an entire dungeon. I could spend $6 on an NPC who I can bring through the entire world with a set of like 200 new lines of dialogue. You know, like those are the other kinds of things you can buy for $6. Or I could buy 24 plants. Like in my mind, if you're going to sell, like, I don't want to belittle in any way the amount of work that goes into it, the expertise that goes into the modeling and the texture work. It is a lot of work. I absolutely understand that. But as somebody who also makes content and makes things and puts them on the internet, I have to also be aware of what the world is willing to pay for, what they value it as, not how much work I put into it. Right. So when I price things on Patreon for people to support the show, I have to consider not just how much work does it take for me to make it, but like, what are people willing to spend? And if I overprice it, I should probably expect that people aren't going to buy it. So in my mind, if I'm going to spend $6 on textures and new models for things, then I feel like maybe 100 things in that pack would be really great, or
something more comprehensive. If it was, say, $6 and it was new models and textures for all the alchemy ingredients.
Right, like an entire pack of something that I use.
Behind it, I'd be a little bit more excited for. Yeah,
if I'm somebody who loves to do alchemy and you can give me shiny, new, cool alchemy stuff and I'm going to use it a lot, then maybe that's worth it to me because it encompasses all of a specific thing. You know, if you're going to do a $6 pack that does brand new textures for all of the melee weapons in the game, that sounds awesome, right? Like, oh, shiny new textures for every sword, every mace, every hammer, you know, every dagger, like across the board. And I know that's a lot of skins. That's a lot of texture work, but that feels like a complete set of things that you could spend $5 or $6 on. And now you've got it in your game. You're going to use these new textures. You're going to see them all the time. But when it's plants in the environment, like we said, do you even notice that you passed by the new model? Like most of the time,
the people who are really into the graphics will notice, and it could then be argued that they're the ones who are going to be more interested in buying these in the first place. The other concern, which you mentioned a little bit earlier, the greater concern at this point is now the idea of nickel and diming, because now we're getting each individual plant released one by one, and when this started we didn't know that there was going to be a volume one pack. We can assume that there will be a volume two pack later on and so on, but we don't. No, we kind of have to kind of sit and wait and see. And that can either lead to you spending a lot more money because you're buying all these one by one by one. For all we know, there will be an all-in-one later on that'll encompass everything in volumes 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
We don't know because that communication is not there.
And that's going to drive people away from making the purchase because now they're unsure. And Steam has fixed this. They've solved this problem. When they pack a bunch of games or DLC into a pack, if you already own certain things, then it reduces that cost off the bottom line. It subtracts it. So if Bethesda was to do that with something like this, then that totally makes sense. Oh, okay, well, you already have, you know, 5 of the new 12 textures or whatever, then you only pay for the ones you don't have. Okay, that makes sense. But they don't have that system yet. And I think this all goes back to, it is kind of a new thing. They're continuing to grow with it. But if they really are really intentional about this being a marketplace, then it needs to work in the way that people expect marketplaces to work. And I get the idea that, like, if you put the onus on the mod maker to price things, and if people don't buy it, then they're going to have to adjust their prices anyway. Like, capitalism will work out in some way. But there's still guidance for that. Like, when you start a business, typically this, like, if I'm going to start a restaurant, then if I don't know how to price things, it would behoove me to hire an expert who can do the research if I can't do it and say every other burger place in the city charges about this much, between this much and this much for a cheeseburger. This is the area that you should be putting your price in order to be competitive with everyone else. You know, like, you should have that data. And it seems like Bethesda could be supplying them. And maybe they are. Maybe they are supplying these things, but they're still letting them choose at the end. I don't know.
So my understanding, and there'll be some things that I just can't talk about publicly, though, but my understanding, though, from what I've seen, is that Bethesda is there more so to assist, but they're not trying to necessarily dictate what can and can't be done. They're not trying to be too restrictive. Mm-hmm. If you come to them with an idea, if you're in program, for the most part, they're like, all right, go for it, make it. And
it seems like
on their FAQ, it says they'll suggest pricing, but right. that it's ultimately up to the author.
Yeah, it seems like the guide rails need to be a little bit more helpful to the consumer.
I think that's the biggest thing. I think right now we're not looking at what the consumer sees. I think a lot of the people in the program are looking at it more so of they're setting their price based on the cut they'll get per sale, because Bethesda takes a cut because they're right. the publisher in right. this case. Right. They're looking at their percentage. They're looking at what each sale makes them, and they're setting it based on that, which is really the wrong way to look at it, because of the fact that, you know, you're releasing this today. Okay, maybe you get five sales today, two tomorrow, but this is going to be here potentially indefinitely. You're going to be making sales potentially years from now. That it becomes an ongoing form of payment. And if you're worried only in the short term about this is how much I'll make today, you're probably pricing it in a way that is pricing out several potential buyers.
Right, right. And the flexibility, like I think Steam is a great example. Like if I put a game on Steam and 3 months from now, I'm like, well, I need to sell more copies. I can put it on sale for 25% off, you know, like, and that'll be a regular thing. In fact, anybody who buys games on Steam will know the game comes out at a certain price. If you wait a certain amount of time, depending on how well it reviews, it'll go down in price. It'll go on sale. Then it goes back up to regular price. And then a little bit later, 6 months later, maybe there's a big Steam sale for the summer and it goes down in price again. So if you are somebody who is a little bit more price sensitive as a buyer, you wait for those moments for the big sale, or you actually wait for the person who posted it to reduce the total price. There are a lot of games and a lot of DLC on Steam that came out at $60, but now you can buy it for $40. That's the standard price because it's been out for 3 years and, you know, they're not doing a marketing push anymore, and they would just be happy if you picked one up, but it might still go on sale for $20. You know, like, if that was the way the system worked, then I feel, and you have the other thing where if you already have part of the pack, it reduces from the total cost. Like, those seem like intelligent ways to help the consumer and to also drive more sales in the long run for the people making the mods, which would make Bethesda and the mod makers more money in the long run. It seems like a win-win for everybody if you could build those systems in. And then the question becomes, and I've worked in businesses that have people who work in code and tech stuff. I used to actually review a lot of the code for one of the projects that we did with a mobile app. I was the person who like was the liaison between the coding team and the marketing team and gave them instructions like, here's what we want to go for the next, you know, the next scrum or whatever, all that, you know, what each business has different terminology for their cycles and things. But the point is that there's a way that that can work, right? There's a way that that can work best for everybody. And yes, it will need some development in order to put forward and test it out. But at the same time, if this is potentially going to be a cash cow for them in every game they release from now on, because it seems like that's what they want to do with Starfield, probably with the next Elder Scrolls game, the next Fallout game, they're going to want to have this as another avenue of income, then it would make sense to make that a priority. And maybe they are working on some of the stuff in the background. We just don't know. But it definitely feels like something that would really benefit everybody.
Because Creation Club, like the older Creation Club stuff from years ago, I don't know if they ever did discounts, but they did occasionally do things where they would make certain packs free, where if you download it during this time, it's free right now and it's free to keep. I think that could be a great thing where every now and then they say, hey, we're going to pay you, the mod author who released this paid creation, will pay you X amount to make this free for the next week. Are you okay with that?
Right. And it becomes a marketing thing. Look at it
and say, like, okay, this would be the equivalent of, oh, this will be the equivalent of 500 sales from my cut, from my commission. Sure.
Yeah. Right. And right. And to Bethesda, it's part of the marketing budget because they get buzz. They get people loading back up the game, going into creations, downloading a thing, playing the game some more, telling their friends, oh, you should get back in there and get this thing. And while you're at that, look at the other packs this guy makes because he makes some really cool stuff. I really like what he does. And then maybe they sell a $5 pack for something else. Yeah, that's how marketing works, right? Yep. Like that is a basic strategy in marketing stuff. So I think now that we've solved all of their marketing problems, why don't we transition? Because we've been kind of complaining and fussing about them things for a while. I don't want to only look at the bad side of this, because there is a good side, right? Some of the things that have been released, in your opinion, and in a number of other people's opinions, are worth the money and are actually doing some really cool things. The first one that comes to mind for me is The Bard's College, which came out a while back. I bought it. I know a lot of other people have tried it out. It's usually getting some very good reactions. It seems like there's a lot of content behind that purchase. It was like $10, I think.
Yep, 10 on the dot.
$10. And you got an entire quest line for the Bard's College. Like, it was a whole guild with new characters and like new shouts. Like, you do different things with shouts. There's dungeons. There's a storyline. What are your thoughts on that one?
So, and that was a really fun one for me, because up until Bard's College expansion, which released in August of 2024, we really hadn't had a whole lot of big quests through creations yet. There were a couple dungeons, there were maybe some small quests, but there really hadn't even been too many with new voice acting. And over the summer, I got to hear from one of the people from Bethesda. They reached out, they said, hey, this mod team, they're making a new creation, they'd like to talk to you about covering it. And the mod team in question is King Gath. For people in the modding scene, you might know them because they created the Sim Settlement series for Fallout 4, which is regarded as one of the biggest and best quest mods for Fallout 4, period.
These are people who understand. It's at the top of the list. Like, it's one of the most downloaded mods ever for Fallout.
Yeah. These are people who understand quest design, who understand, voice acting, who know how to make new game mechanics and everything. So when I heard that they were working on something, I said, absolutely, put me in touch with them. And Bard's College expansion released at $10 at 1,000 Creation Club Todd Bucks, whatever you want to call them now.
Yeah.
But like you said, their goal was to create a fully realized guild for the Bard's College, the same way that you would have for the Companions, the Dark Brotherhood, and so on. And in some ways, their version of the Bard's College was more feature complete than any of those base game guilds. Like you said, there was a central quest line in which you were learning new shouts, enhancing your shouts. They added a new system where you could choose three shouts that you strung together. So you could do all three words of Fusro Dav, followed by all three words of Fire Breath, followed by all three words of Frost Breath, stuff like that.
That creates so much potential for like
people who want to do like
all sorts
builds.
Of chaotic,
it's,
fun
it's
things.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, like they I'm going to slow down time, I'm going to blow you across the map and set you on fire at the same time, and then I'm going to unfreeze time, and you just like, that sounds insane. That's so cool. Yep.
They added, like you said, they added some new shouts. There was one where essentially you summon a pillar of earth underneath your enemies, and it could just eject them into the air, but you could also use it for platforming if you needed to get up to a higher place.
Yeah, that's cool.
There was a secondary and a tertiary quest system as well, one where you did the old school Monkey Island insult duels.
Okay.
And they actually spoke to someone from Monkey Island about it as well, and kind of got like their blessing of having their iteration in Skyrim.
Yeah, I purchased this, but I haven't gotten all into it yet. I need to dive into some of the stuff. But that's hilarious. That is great.
It was great. They even got a couple of the original Skyrim voice actors back to do new lines. And the crazy thing about that is, in order to do so, they had to pay those voice actors union rates, which is unheard of and is impossible almost 99% of the time in free modding. The creations that I've worked closest with are the more big quest focused ones. So Bard's College Expansion, Coven of Crones, and A Tale of Blood and Snow. And from everyone that I spoke to who voiced those projects, they were all paid at the very least an indie game rate. We're now creating new opportunities, new job avenues for people in the gaming scene, which to me is really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of content feels like it's worth $10. You know, like if they were to release a Bard's College, an official Bard's College DLC made by Bethesda, and it had all that stuff in it, $10 would feel great. I wouldn't have an issue with spending $10 on that. Like, that seems very reasonable. So you mentioned two other ones. What are these two others, and how do you feel about those?
So the other two that I mentioned, one of them is A Tale of Blood and Snow, and the third is Coven of Crones. A Tale of Blood and Snow is another $10 creation. It is a quest-focused expansion that gives you a little bit more to do with the vampire clans in Skyrim outside of Volgahar, the Dawnguard, and so on. Mm-hmm. It brings back one of the clans from the Elder Scrolls 3, Morrowind. It brings in a clan that has been mentioned a little bit in lore in Skyrim previously, but you know, you don't really get to see. And it goes more so into the clan politics of other vampire clans who were maybe not trying to get rid of the sun and not trying to be as on everyone's radar. Mm-hmm. But you have three different factions that you can play in that creation. You can join either of the two new vampire clans, or you can join the Vigilant Istendar. And playing any one of those three faction lines is not as long as, say, Bard's College Expansion, because of the fact that they had to try and manage their resources to create all three quest lines as opposed to just one. But it added some new gear, it added some new story threads, a lot of new Radiant quests as well. And in the end, it was really fun. They added 10 different dungeons, they added some new spells, new powers, and for me, one of the best parts of it was the replayability, because now across three different playthroughs, you have three different ways to play it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a lot of content. 10 dungeons, like 10 fully fleshed out dungeons.
They commissioned people to make dungeons, once again, giving more possibilities, more opportunities to people in the modding scene who are maybe looking for a way to be able to support themselves financially.
Yeah, yeah. No, that, like, that sounds awesome. That's like in a world where, and this is what we've been going through for over the last year in the gaming, in the, you know, gaming business, people have been losing their jobs. Thousands of people have lost their jobs in the last year because gaming as a whole has reduced. It's been the first year in many years where total amount of sales, total volume of sales in gaming has dropped. And so studios are shuttering, or they're cutting out a lot of developers. There's a lot of people losing their jobs. But to do something like this, to give people potential for actual financial employment and create new cool stuff for a game like Skyrim, which a lot of us are still playing, and it's still awesome and it's cool and it's worth the $10, like, I don't have a problem. Like, I can still get my free mods if I want to do my free mods. But if I can spend $10 for something that feels really, really good and is interesting and gives me, like you said, multiple playthrough opportunities, new dungeons, new content, and it just works. It just works by just downloading it and like loading it up, and it's good. And like, I don't see how that's a problem. You know, because if Bethesda had been the people doing it in their own studio and they released that same content for $10, you know, the only hang up I would have is I'm one of these people too. We do a lore podcast, is the question of like, well, is it canon?
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
You know,
they've addressed that. Bethesda has flat out said no.
No, right.
They still haven't addressed where Creation Club fits in. I like to think Creation Club also isn't canon, but that's a whole other discussion that we can get into another day.
Sure, sure. But and that does give me a little bit of hesitance, but more so because I do a podcast about the lore in Elder Scrolls. If I didn't do this podcast, I don't think I would matter that much. But because I do this podcast, I know that if I ingest 50 of these things into my brain, at some point my brain's gonna go, wasn't there a canon thing that happened with this other vampire clan from Morrowind that showed up in Skyrim? And then I'm gonna have to, like, someone's gonna be like, no, that's not a thing. And I'm gonna be like, oh yeah, that was a mod, I forgot, you know, like that confusion level. But outside of that, like, I don't have an issue with like, oh well, here's a scenario that could have played out, that's fun.
Yep.
You know, there's nothing
I'm running into that specific issue right now with a free mod that I'm playing, because it touches on some of the lesser known, not lesser known to you, but some of the lesser known lore in the early fourth era, you know, from the two novels, from legends, from stuff like that that maybe not everyone knows about.
Yeah.
And it's telling a story that takes some of that lore and then creates its own new lore in regards to the Anzaleel and Umbriel and everything. So as I'm playing it, I have to sit here and go,
yeah,
I'm going to check the wiki. I'm going to go check UESP because I don't remember what is being made up for the mod versus what's actually canon. And I had to like sit through and look through and go, okay, this and this is official. The rest of it was for this mod. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause, Umbriel, the novels have very specific things that happen. I believe they're considered canon. Lotus and I bring them up every so often.
Yes, they are.
And they, you're right. They do fit within this kind of in between time period between like Oblivion and Skyrim. And they do expand on a lot of really interesting lore in the world that doesn't really get addressed in the games. So they're absolutely worth reading, but I can totally see how you ingest the games, you ingest into your brain, you read the novels, and then another year later you play a mod, and another year later you do this other thing, and then after 5 years go by and you're like,
it's all just kind of like book? Melded together, right. It's all melted together, and you're like, something happened there,
right? Was that in the book? Was that, no, that conversation, no, that character wasn't in the book, that, oh, that was a mod, okay, so that's not canon. I mean, it could happen, but it's not really. So yeah, I totally get that perspective, but I think that's a very small caveat. That's when a, it comes down yeah. to like, hey, you know what, I just want to play these games and have a good time, and holy crap, that mod pack looks really cool, so you know, hey, it's worth $10, I'll buy it.
I get it too, and it's one thing that I run into where, once again, having done this for so long, specifically playing mods for YouTube, this has been my full-time job for almost 10 years. 10 years this spring.
Wow.
Because that would be when I graduated from college. But for me, I recognize that in the way that I view paid mods, paid creations, the way that I view them, play them, consume them is very different from how other people are, because at the end of the day, I'm doing it to put out a video, to put out a review, and yes, I'm spending $10 on this creation, that creation, but I'm also then making that money back.
And yeah, you're justifying case, it's a business cost. Yes.
Yeah, right. I'm playing it the one time through, I'm getting my full playthrough there, but I'm likely not coming back to it again, because in my case, it's like I clock into Skyrim and I clock out at the end of the day. So right. I recognize that I have a very different opinion and a very different relationship, not just with paid creations, but with free mods as well, just because, you know, it's going to sound terrible to some people. It's like, this has become, you know, my career of choice. I'm not playing it just as a fan anymore. I'm still a fan. I still love the games. I still love the modding scene, but I'm in a different position than a lot of other people are, and I recognize that.
I think this is something that doesn't come up a lot, but absolutely needs to be understood by people, is that once, and it happens to me too, I've heard, in fact, just this last week, one of the streamers I watch who plays, doesn't play Elder Scrolls stuff, plays other stuff, something came up in the chat, and they responded, somebody asked them, hey, are you going to try this game out? And they said, well, if
I think I know where this is going.
My decision about, am I going to play this game, usually comes down to, can I play it on stream? And if no, is it worth my time outside of stream? Because my time outside of that is family stuff and other things. And if it seems like it's worth that time, then maybe. But I can't give you a guarantee, because I first have to think about what I'm playing on stream. And there's somebody who streams for like 8, 9, 10 hours a day, you know, like, so that is a major concern. And I have the same concern. People will say, hey, you're going to go play this other thing. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I don't know, because I have to ask the question, does it fit into the content that I'm going to make? I do multiple podcasts about multiple games, and sometimes it does, you know, like I'm considering picking up Avowed because that's coming out. In fact, it's pre-access came out today, and it is
great reviews so far.
The reviews seem to be pretty good. It's by Obsidian. Obsidian is related to Bethesda in a way because they worked on New Vegas. Avowed is very Elder Scrolls-ish without being as big and expansive as Elder Scrolls. So it would make sense to have that experience in order to relay it on the show. So therefore, it seems like, okay, this gets a little bit more priority than do I pick up Civilization 7? Right? Because Civilization 7 doesn't have anything to do with Fallout or Elder Scrolls or Lord of the Rings or, you know, any of the shows that I do. So, like, now, do I have extra time to play games? Well, yeah, sometimes, you know, but honestly, a lot of people who do, a lot of people who do content creation spend way more time doing content creation every day than you would expect. Like the general feeling from people is, oh, that seems like an easy job. It seems like you only have to do this much work, but usually that's not the case.
The live hours are my favorite part. Everything outside of that, it's a pain.
Yeah, right.
I still like it, but by comparison, the hours that I get to be live and just hanging out, best part.
Right,
but that's only a fraction of it.
And that's a small part of it. And you do a lot of live streaming as part of your regular schedule, and I don't. Like, I'm managing the podcast network. I'm doing a lot of other things. I'm working with editors to do video stuff, so I don't have to capture the video stuff myself for, like, my Fallout channel. This show is mostly talking heads, and we record once a week. But when we're getting into the lore stuff, I have to do research. I have to plan. You know, like, it takes time to figure out, okay, this is what we're doing, this is how we're doing it, and it's just one show among many. So, like, and of course, there's, you know, life has other priorities. There's other stuff going on, family and, you know, my wife and kids and all sorts of other things. So yeah, at the end of the day, I might have some extra time to play a game, but that is not as important to me as, is this going to further the career that I'm working on, right? Like, that is always going to take first priority. And to wrap this up, I totally understand that that is different from most people who ingest our content, who watch our streams or listen to our shows or any of that stuff. So, like, I get it. That makes sense. Like, we are going to have a slightly different perspective of how we engage with these things. But at the same time, I'm still a fan of the game. I'm still looking it through the eyes of, like, okay, would it be awesome to be a different type of vampire and have a reason to play Skyrim again and try out something very different that I normally don't try out? Usually the answer is yes, you know, like, yeah, that sounds awesome. So it's a little bit of both, but, here, you mentioned a third one. What was the third one that you're recommending?
The third one is Coven of Crones, and that comes in at $5 at 500 Creation Club credits. And that comes from three of the members of the Skyblivion mod team. For anyone not familiar, Skyblivion is a major mod slated to come out later this year, where it's over 100 people in total, and they have been working tirelessly for over 10 years now to reimagine the Elder Scrolls for Oblivion in Skyrim. So you launch up Skyrim with this mod installed, and you're playing through the entire main questline of closing the Oblivion Gates. You're playing through the Fighter's Guild. You're going through and stopping Mana Marco and everything you knew from Oblivion, but redesigned, reimagined in Skyrim with the benefit of time, the benefit of it's been 19 years since Oblivion came out. Here's what's changed in game design. Here's what's changed in level design, in designing cities and all of that.
Yeah.
And it's made by people who love both Oblivion and Skyrim and want to show their take on it.
Right. We did an episode just a few weeks ago with our patrons talking about the Skyblivion and then also the Oblivion remake that's been rumored still.
Yep.
And what our expectations and hopes are for those things. So if you are a regular listener, watcher of this show, then you're familiar with that. So, but yeah, so they worked on this, like, it's like a witch's DLC, right?
So it was three of the members from the Skyblivion team. It was Heavy Burns, who's also a YouTuber, as well as one of their dungeon designers, has helped with nav meshing and stuff like that. Rin, who is another level designer, has done a lot of remods in the past, and a third member as well, who I think intentionally is a little bit more off the radar, but is a part of this team that they call Hightail Creations or Hightail Productions. They created a $5 paid creation revolving around the hags and the crones in the Elder Scrolls universe, creating a new small island. I say small, but it was around the size of Solstheim from the Dragonborn DLC.
It's a DLC-sized island.
Yeah, with the idea being that you're sucked into this story of trying to stop Anise, the witch outside of Riverwood, from completing this ritual and becoming like a fully formed hag, and taking down, like, her small coven of her two kind of, like, apprentices, as it were. You're going through and seeing the other people who were not so smart and kind of fell for, like, these witches, like, tricks and everything. So you have the bard who is doomed to make the same performance again and again and again and again, because he said he wanted every performance to be like as good as his last or something like that. The woman who's so vain that, you know, she said she wants to be irresistible, so they make her smell terrible so that the skeevers are are going after her and stuff like that. That's it's great. A really fun, really enjoyable experience. And
but see, that stuff feels like something Bethesda would make.
Yeah, well, one of the critiques people had was that it reminded them too much of Auntie Ethel from Baldur's Gate 3. And I saw some inspiration from like the D&D iteration of Witches and Hags, and I could also see a little bit of inspiration from Auntie Ethel in the way that the voice actress delivered some lines, but it was all still really fun, and for me, it all still really fit into the Elder Scrolls. It gave you a brand new house, it gave you new quests, new items, and the team was really reasonable with that price of
That's $5. That's like a DLC-sized island with a whole quest line, voice acting, a house. I mean, for $5.
It was really good. That's what Hearthfire cost.
Right.
And that was that's what Hearthfire cost 13 years ago.
Yes, right. So with inflation, that's like, what, $7 or $8 at this point, at least. Yeah. Oh, my God. That's, So, man, those sound like really, really cool things. Now you've put them on my list, and I'm considering playing through them. Let me know if you'd like me to try some of these things out and stream them or put them up as, like, VODs on the Patreon or whatever.
I do highly recommend all three of those three, and it's, I am still biased, but my favorite of those three is still Bard's College expansion. For me, that has still been the best creation to come out. Those are all three very good ones, but for me, Bard's College expansion especially just really scratched that itch because of how much it added to the rest of Skyrim as well. Like, it felt like a much more all-encompassing expansion.
So are there any other, like, little expansions that you've played or installed, you know, like weapons packs or, you know, like kind of more minor things, a character who follows you around, that kind of stuff that you're like, actually, this one's really good. It's worth the price.
I've tried a few, and in a lot of cases, there were many times where I was happy with the content and sometimes even still wishing that the prices had been adjusted slightly. One of the very first creations that came out in December 2023 that I was actually very skeptical of, it was called the Archibus, and it was essentially going to add a what was meant to be a more lore friendly in universe version of a firearm.
I have seen this. In fact, you use it on your video.
And I remember thinking, I was like, oh, haha, it's like Skyrim with guns. Okay, I get it.
Right.
And I was like, I'll give it a shot because, you know, creations had just come out. I wanted to see what there was. And I was like, all right, could be interesting. It was priced at $6 USD, 600 Creation Club credits. And what stood out to me wasn't even the weapon itself, the weapon type, because it added all new variants of the weapon as well. You could craft multiple variants. You could add it to, you could give the schematics to your Civil War faction, and then Civil War soldiers could start going around with their firearm as well.
Yeah.
But what stood out to me was the dungeon to get the weapons in the first place. It was maybe an hour and a half for me to complete, and it was one of the best Skyrim dungeon experiences I had had in years at that point. And I was blown away. And when I mentioned that in my review of, like, the dungeon was fantastic, the dungeon is what made this, the mod author even said, I'm not a dungeon designer, I just wanted to make sure that I gave people something cool. I'm a 3D designer. I wanted to make sure that I was giving people something so that it felt worth it to get a gun at the end. And I said, you did that. You absolutely did.
But that's one of the things we enjoy about Skyrim is, like, you do a cool dungeon, you get a cool weapon at the end. You do a cool quest line, you get a cool thing, right? Like, that's part of the fun. Like, you do a Daedric Prince quest, you get a cool Daedric Prince weapon. You know, like, it makes sense that you would tie those things together. But so what's your critique on this?
The only critique I had was that, and it was very, it's a fairly minor critique at the end, but my only complaint was $6 felt a little high. $5 would have felt better to me. And I do hope that at some point, maybe Bethesda even gives mod authors an option to change pricing. Maybe not to raise it, but to lower it
or to put it
in
on
the
sale.
Future.
You know,
yeah.
Or I mean, you can even put things on permanent sale. I wouldn't have a problem with that. Like it's exactly, normally $6, but now it's $5, and we're just going
to
leave it there for a while.
As someone who bought it at $6, if it went down to $5, I'd say good because now other people are getting that benefit.
Right.
I've had it for the past year or so. That's fine.
Yeah.
Like to me, that happens all the time with games. I'm not going to get mad every time a game goes on sale because I bought it at the full price.
Right. Right. I mean, just like when you buy, like, you know, when a game launches, you're going to spend $60 on it or whatever. Right. $70. Well, maybe buy the special edition for $90. Yeah. Like it depends. Right. But, but you know, you're going to buy it for that much. You know, it's going to go on sale at some point. And then when it goes on sale, if you enjoyed it, you're not going to be like, oh, I wish I waited because, well, you wouldn't have been able to play it.
I would have waited then. Yeah.
Right. Like, and if it really is worth the money to wait, then you're just going to wait and you pick it up on sale. Like I do both. Sometimes I buy a brand new game when it comes out because I feel like it's worth it. And sometimes I'm like, you know, like speaking of Civilization 7, seems like it's got some issues. People are kind of about it right now. And so maybe we'll let it, you know, mature for the next 6 months. And then if I feel like I've got extra time and it goes on sale, maybe I'll pick it up. You know, like both things work, you know?
In the case of something like Civilization 7, I'll just reinstall 6 or 5 for now because as someone who's not a diehard fan, it's like, I'm not going to know the differences anyway.
Oh, there's some significant differences I've heard. But anyway, this isn't a Civilization podcast. That sounds like some really, really cool stuff. You've given me some things to think about and some things to consider, you know, spending some money on and downloading and playing because they all sound really cool. At least the ones that some of the ones that you pointed out on your video of like, yeah, don't get this one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't get those. But these ones sound great.
That's generally not what I like to do on YouTube either. Generally speaking, I only want to buy and showcase the ones that at first glance I think might be worth their price point, because frankly, like, maybe I could do very well making videos where it's just me trashing individual creations. However,
we're the same about that.
It's a waste of my time and my money, and I don't like watching videos of people being mad for the most part.
I answered a question recently on Discord where somebody posted a video about somebody being really upset about something in, I don't know, Elder Scrolls or Fallout or something. I don't remember what it was. And they, like, the conversation kind of moved on and people started critiquing the video and they're like, yeah, but like, you realize that people who do this kind of content are doing it because it makes them money. Like, a lot of times their critique isn't even good. And my response was, if I wanted to make way more money, I would just, like, anybody who has any good reasoning skills can come up with a reason why something is bad. And then they can just talk about that. And then they can just build a lot of, you know, negative reception around it and talk about how, like, well, you might think this thing is good, but this, for this reason, it really sucks. And then you can do videos about that and you're going to get way more clicks. And if I wanted to make a lot more money, I could do that. But I do not want to just be negative. And Lotus and I will critique things. We'll say, okay, this is what we really like about this, and these are the things that we think could be better. But we always try to be fair and balanced. We always try to be honest about our feelings, and our feelings sometimes change. But we, you know, like, it is not about, you know, just playing the negativity game and making money. That's not why we do what we do. And you're very much the same way. I think that's part of one of the reasons why we all get along, is because we go in wanting to enjoy things and sometimes we just don't. And so we have some critiques. Like in this episode today, we have critiques. That doesn't mean it's all bad. It means it's a nuanced perspective. And like you and I said at the beginning of the show, every time you put a nuanced perspective on the internet, you're going to get haters. Automatically. But you also are going to find people who respect that and they go, okay, I may not agree 100%, but at least you gave it some real consideration and you thought about it and you weren't just creating clickbait, you know?
And that was one thing that I brought up in my video about the paid creations, the state of it after a year or so. I don't want to change anyone's opinion, or at least I should not be the deciding factor that changes someone's opinion one way or the other, of like, this should make you completely pro, this should make you completely against. It's the thing of, you're allowed to be somewhere in the middle. You don't have to agree with me, because once again, I think there are very valid critiques and concerns about the paid creations existing whatsoever. I think there's very valid concerns about the state of it now, with, once again, you have some nickel and dime, you have some really terrible practices, you have some asset flips, and I was more negative in that video than I am most of the time. I don't want to do an individual video where I'm just saying, don't buy this one creation because it's terrible. But if I'm talking to a larger picture of these practices, I think are a problem. These are the practices that maybe should be avoided either within the program or as consumers, we should maybe be a little bit more aware of.
Right.
Like that's less so being done to attack and more so being done to be like, just so you guys know, I think this could be better.
Right. You're a consumer advocate. You're not rage baiting. There's a difference, right? There is absolutely a difference. It's just like somebody who does a game review and they're like, hey, I went into this game hoping it was good. It's okay. I loved this stuff, but I didn't love this stuff. You're just being a consumer advocate. Before you buy this, make sure you realize that if this is important to you, maybe you won't like these things. If this part is important to you, maybe you'll like these things. That's my perspective. All I can do is share it, right? And that's what you're doing. And that is 100% legit. I mean, Lotus on his other podcast, on Tales of Tamriel, talks about Elder Scrolls Online all the time. It's not just all, you know, rainbows and sunshine, because every game has issues, and sometimes they really bring stuff up and they're like, you know what, Zoss really needs to fix this because there's a problem here. And that's just being honest. It's not, but they don't dwell on it and they don't only do negative content, you know, like, and that's the difference.
The most important part is they're not making it personal.
That's
a problem that we see a lot, is that people make it personal, either attacking specific devs or in some cases now with creations, I see people attacking individual mod authors either in the program or outside of the program. And to me, that's one of the things that I really like the least right now, because modding was always a thing of supporting each other. And I want to see mod authors support each other, whether they are, you know, people who are forever free in the modding scene or if they're dipping their toes into some paid content alongside free content. I think there's space for everyone to still show each other some respect for their fellow mod author. And that's what I really hope we can go back to, because there have been some very hard lines in the sand drawn over, you joined this paid program, I will never give you the time of day again. And I'm seeing people end year-long friendships over it, and it's really upsetting to me.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, like when it gets personal. And you and I are content creators. It's not like we don't get our fair share of comments, even though we're not charging people for our content. Like, you can sign up, you can subscribe on your Twitch stream, you can join our Patreon, like, you can do those things. But the majority of people who check out our content do it for free, and you will still get people who get like really personal and offend. I can't believe you did this video or have this opinion. It's like, okay, maybe we should just have like a conversation rather than name calling. You know, like, who hurt you and what's wrong? You know, like, it's unfortunate that the world feels like that right now. And I think that it will be something we will hopefully eventually grow out of, as maybe we mature and understand that, like, that is unsustainable. Nobody wants to be that miserable all the time. So anyway, this kind of took a turn at the end, but like, I think to your point, it's unfortunate, but I think that the creations as a whole is only as good as the quality that gets put on there, as good as the pricing and those kinds of things. And just like any marketplace, you don't have to buy a thing if you don't think it's worth the value. If I go to the store and I don't want to spend $7 for eggs, I don't have to buy them, you know, like.
My grocery list is getting shorter and shorter as I look at prices for everything. I'm like, all right, not as much ground beef this week, or maybe one less pack of chicken this week. And one less creation this week.
Going to eat some more oatmeal. But that's the way it goes. But hey, tell you what, why don't we take a quick break? We're going to go thank our patrons, and then we're going to come back. We'll do some final words. And we've got our random UESP page, which I didn't forget this time. And we'll cover that when we get back. So don't go anywhere.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
All right, so real quick, welcome to our newest patrons, Cosmo Berry, Cameron R., and Iliana, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, Ileana W., welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you decided to join us. Patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. You can get ad-free audio episodes. I think I might end up putting up the video episodes too at some point. And then you just get ad-free video episodes as well for just the same price. Seems like a good idea. So that'll be coming. Also, we're going to be doing giveaways at some point. Lotus has had some family sick things going on. We haven't been able to really flesh all of that out yet, but you can join for free and then we'll be doing some giveaways for like ESO stuff on there, including for free members. So go check that out. Plus you can get t-shirts and you can join us for patron chats and all of that. Also, I have to shout out our Daedric Princes, Blinding Vision, Hersine, Kirisi, and Peter R. Thank you so much for your continued support. They are one of our highest tiers and they get shout outs every week. And I've got this new review from Lydia Loremaster on Apple. If you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read it out on a future episode of the show. They write, praise, smiley face, I love this show. I finished Fallout Lorecast and have been listening to this one on Spotify, but thought I should pop over to leave a review. I have always loved this universe and I have learned so much since starting the show. I have been playing ESO and have recently started playing Skyrim again. It has become my new obsession and I highly recommend to everyone. Thank you so much. What a wonderful review. That's awesome. Thank you everybody for your continued support and for being here. And to our YouTube audience, which continues to grow, so glad that you are here. Comment and give us a thumbs up. Let us know your thoughts about creations. And like George and I were talking about, you don't have to agree with us. In fact, I think that's part of having a wonderful community. If you have different perspectives or the same perspectives, please comment and let us know your thoughts. Maybe you'll educate us about a different way to kind of perceive things, especially because some of you have a very different perspective on things than we do as content creators. So please be part of the community and do that. Join us on the Discord. There's a link in the description. And then, George, before we do our random page, is there anything else you want to share or ways people can reach out to you?
So because this whole conversation and coming on today was inspired by, like you said, my recent video on creations, the state of it. And that's a, not to toot my own horn, that's a pretty comprehensive.
Yeah. No, it was great.
Video going was, over it.
I like your content in general, but when that popped up on my like recommended feed and I was like, oh, I have to click. It was like, there was no hesitance. I was like, oh, George did a video. Oh, cool. Okay. Well, yes. And it's like 20 something minutes long. Like it goes through a lot of different stuff.
Script was closer to like 35 minutes. And then as I went through it, I was like, all right, this doesn't flow as well, that doesn't work as well, and you know, the usual editing process, but it's good because it goes into more of the rules about like, oh, what's allowed in the program, what's not allowed.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of the nitty-gritty, which
I learned stuff here, but then I didn't know some of these things, so I yes,
we would be here for another 2 hours if we went into all of that, because once again, scripted versus conversational. But check it out, because you know, you'll get some more information about what is out there, what's allowed in the program, and some additional thoughts about just the whole situation, including how Starfield ties into it, because Starfield is in a unique position where Starfield's free mod scene launched at the same time as the paid mod scene. And that's actually one of the biggest concerns that people have right now, is that Skyrim's free mod scene might be a lot slower because of how much more priority is being put into what can I put out on the paid storefront. So people are now concerned if that's what'll happen with The Elder Scrolls 6, or if it's more so just because Starfield has had more of a mixed reception compared to something like Skyrim.
Yeah.
Skyrim and The Elder Scrolls has the largest mod scene out of any of Bethesda's properties. I think it always will. But there is something to be said about the fact that Starfield's mod scene has been so much quieter versus the paid scene, which is taking off a little bit more, or at least getting more releases every week by comparison. So that's one of those things where I'll be very curious to see when The Elder Scrolls 6 does release.
Yeah, there's a lot of variables. It's hard to know.
Especially given like this is going to be a couple of years, at least a couple of years away. You know, it's, you could sit here and speculate all day, but we'll have to wait and see. I'm personally not too worried because once again, Skyrim's modding scene goes back to Morrowind. The modding scene that we have for Skyrim in its current state started with Morrowind. You have people who have been modding since then and
will mod for the Elder Scrolls over 20 years. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the Elder Scrolls, there's something, I don't know, like I like sci-fi, but I always want to come back to fantasy. You know,
it's something very comforting. I started with Fallout. That was my first Bethesda property. And then when I discovered Skyrim, I was like, oh, all right, well, now I'm home. Got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love both series. But they inhabit different. It's almost like different relationships with different kinds of friends.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's the best way to put it.
Right. Like Elder Scrolls was my first love. So it feels like my best friend from high school, who even if we haven't seen each other in a few years, everything feels like it's the same as it was last time we talked, you know. And then like Fallout feels like, oh, the buddies I hung out with in college who I don't, you know, also get to see every so often. But I just don't go back as far. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it's so funny you say that because I just had that in real life with a friend from high school just got married and I hadn't seen him since we both moved out of the city 3 years ago, but, you know, seen each other for each other's respective bachelor parties. And then his wedding just picked up immediately where we left off. Like no time had passed at all. So it was a very accurate description.
Yeah. It's like, they're all good friends. Like they're all like, if you were to say, who are your best friends? All of these are my best friends. But they're not the same. There's still a little bit difference there, right?
Each friendship is different.
Right, right. And it just feels a little bit different. And I appreciate them in different ways because of that. You know, like, so anyway. But yeah, thanks again for being here. Zero Period Productions on YouTube. You can just look you up. And I'm sure if you look up, you know, like the state of Skyrim paid mods, your video will probably show up at the top of that list. Because I can't think of too many other people doing those videos right now. But thanks for being here.
I want to see more. I genuinely think that the best way for the program to improve, for people to get a better idea of what's out there, is if more YouTubers are willing to do review content or discussion content about this. We're still at a point where Bethesda hasn't implemented a review system. There is a refund system, but it's kind of hidden.
It's
things where until we get that back in support or that support on the storefront, I think there should be more voices in this space who are willing to give the reviews, discuss this, show it off, because frankly, that's going to be really helpful for the consumer right now.
Yeah.
I don't think I should be the only one because other people have other things to add. Everyone has their own knowledge, their own experience to bring into this. So I would love to see more people who are willing to take on these projects and show this off, because once again, like you said, there's more that I could learn from them.
Absolutely. It's all part of being part of the community. And on top of it, we have a lot of people who listen to the show who ask questions about like, well, how do I get into content creation? Like my first recommendation to so many people is find a niche. And so if there aren't a whole lot of people doing that kind of content, guess what? That's a niche. Like, fill that hole. Like George is doing some of it, but not a whole lot of other people are doing it. So give your perspective, give people, you know, differences of views on the same kinds of content. So just a little bit of advice there. But thanks again, George, for joining us. And you're welcome to stay for our random. We always do a random UESP page at the end. And I hit the random button and we have something from Morrowind. Speaking about Morrowind.
Oh, here we go.
So this is a character. This is a merchant from Morrowind. Donoso Androno, that's how you pronounce the name. Donoso Androno is a dark elf apothecary who serves at the Aldruin Temple. There she sells all manner of alchemical supplies to any that need them. She is a restocking vendor of the following ingredients: Bungler's Bane, Coda Flower, Dreg Wax, Ectoplasm, Hypha Fascia. These words are always hard for me to say.
Yeah, it's Morrowind. You sneeze and you get it right.
Marshmallow, Pearl, Rubrush, Spore Pod, and Wickweed. She wears a common robe and matching shoes. She carries her entire supply of restocking raw ingredients, a small selection of restorative potions, and a journeyman's alembic, mortar and pistol, and retort. She is level 12. She's a dark elf. She carries 300 gold. And she is a novice of the mercantile class. These old games, even
so, some of the newer games, you can take advantage of her pretty easily. Got it.
Yeah, yeah. She has 81 health, 160 magicka, and then fight is a stat in Morrowind. She has 30 fight and 100 alarm. So she seems to probably get alarmed very quickly if you try to take advantage of her. So there you go. And she's part of the Tribunal Temple faction. So there you go. That's our random page. Ta-da. I need to have like a random page sound. I hadn't even thought about doing that before. But yeah, thanks again for joining us, George. Everybody, thank you for being here. Chat, thanks for joining us. And Lotus and I will be back next week. And I didn't mention it, but we're already working all the way through February. We've got one more show before our patron chat in 2 weeks. So if you'd like to join us, there's ample time to sign up on the Patreon. And we haven't decided the topic yet. So feel free to join us and chime in on what you think the topic should be. Our patrons always get to choose. And so that's something coming up. Thanks for being here, everybody. We'll see you next time. And until then, try out some paid mods. Let us know your thoughts. I'd love to get more opinions. So we'll see you next time. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this. And join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.